Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses the current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. Stay tuned and listen to the movers and shakers in multifamily share their opinions and thoughts about what's old, what's new, and where the multifamily industry is heading in the future. You are listening to Multifamily Matters, because multifamily matters.
Well, welcome and thank you for tuning in to Multifamily Matters, the only broadcast radio show in the nation that's solely dedicated to the multifamily industry. I'm your host, Paul Marks. We have a great show with wonderful guests who are experts on today's topic, and today we're discussing the topic of 20 for 20, 20 conversations with senior multifamily executives about the outlook for 2020 and beyond, revisited. Joining me by phone is Donald Davidoff, founder of D2 Demand Solutions, and Don Beveridge, principal with D2 Demand Solutions. Welcome, gentlemen.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you for having us.
So I emphasize the word revisited because about a year ago, you came out with this white paper that was 20 for 20 back in 2019. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I guess it was kind of a projection or prediction of based on the interviews that you had with these executives in the multifamily industry as to where their minds were, what was going on in the industry. So tell us a little bit about what's changed in that year.
Yeah, well, I mean, if we think about the summary that the three of us went through a year ago, there were really five things that jumped out at us through the conversations that we had with these leaders. Just to summarize them, it was number one, there was a surprising number of people. Like, I think half of the people we spoke to, their companies had done really big foundational projects, like a PMS switch, something that you only do once a decade or something like that. So that was unusual. We noticed, number two, of all of the technologies that were being hyped in the industry, when you asked people about their own priorities, those technologies were not on their radar. They were on their radar, but not on their priority list in terms of to-dos for the immediate future. Number three, we noticed that everybody seemed to be doing something with leasing. Like leasing was the number one, or sales was the number one training priority for 2019. Number four, the adoption of business intelligence, hugely important technology, is kind of odd when you, in the context of all of the other enterprise technologies we see in the industry. There'd never been a big bang of adoption for it the same way there is for everything else. And when we talk to people who had done projects in 2018, as it then was, this general sort of lack of enthusiasm for the projects that they'd done, we thought told us something quite interesting about the way that the industry was adopting. And then finally, a subject near and dear to our hearts, pricing and revenue management, just enormously value-driving technology of the last 18 years. I turned 18 in 2019. And our observation was when you talk to COOs and CIOs across the industry, it's really not on their radar at all, or at least it wasn't at the time we were talking to them.
Yeah, and Donald, I know that innovation has been something that you've been involved with for many years with the pricing and revenue. Talk a little bit about that and your background as far as how you got into pricing and revenue to give our listeners a foundation.
As you mentioned, I got into, I've been involved in pricing revenue management software for many years, just coming out of having an engineering background and originally being involved in the travel business. The way I got involved in multifamily was leading the effort that built LRO way back in 1999 to 2001 period, and then rolling out at Archstone 2002 to 2003. What I find really interesting is, you know, a year ago when we did those interviews Dom mentioned, one of the things that became obvious to us was that the industry was at a tipping point in technology, the likes of which we had not seen since those early aughts. If you go back to the early aughts, you had pricing revenue management. Right before that, you had automated credit screening. You had web-based property management systems, resident prospect portals, et cetera. And not that there wasn't any new technology from, say, 2007 or 8 through 2015-16, but they were base hits at best. Now, all of a sudden, you know, with AI, with self-show technology, with a number of other things, it really is a what I want to say. It's a accumulation of new technologies that are really going to change the way we do business, much like all those other technologies were an inflection point back in the early aughts. This time around, talking to 20 people as we got into 2020 was very, very interesting on two levels. One is the pace at which the technology adoption is happening, much, much faster than before. I'll let Dom comment on that in a moment. The other is the way COOs and CIOs are and companies are implementing innovation has really changed. Nine or 10 of the 10 CIOs we interviewed told us that they had fundamentally changed the way they approached innovation in the last 2 years.
Wow. What have you found about that, Dom, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, the thing that really jumps out at you through all of these conversations is that there's a lot of new stuff out there.
Yeah.
So it's a great time to be alive in multifamily. There are all these problems, the new problems that are being solved, all this kind of friction that's being removed from our residents' lives, from our processes, like efficiencies and so on. But on the flip side of that, there are a lot of new companies. Like it's relatively easy at the moment to get venture capital backing for startups, which means there are a lot of them. So, you know, Donald's right. Nearly all of the CIOs that we spoke to have fundamentally changed in the last 2 years the way that they approach this. But when we sort of split this point out by owner operators and fee managers because we saw a slightly different emphasis from each of the. Owner operators that we spoke to, I think it was 9 out of 13 of them said that they had changed the remit or the question that they ask in terms of innovation. So they were instead of taking what you might call a procurement led, you know, let's evaluate this technology or let's evaluate this vendor. They've much more changed their view or changed their approach to one of what problems should we consider solving on behalf of our residents? And then what technologies are worth looking at based on what we've decided we want to do. And there are a few interesting reasons for that. But one thing that we heard again and again was some of the newer technologies, they overlap on each other's functional like territory. The mm-hmm. you know, resident apps is a great example of that, right? Everybody has a resident app that they want your residents to download. So if I'm a smart home tech company, if I'm a resident app company, if I'm a mobile maintenance company, I'm trying to sort of own that interaction with residents. That's a good example of vendors of, you know, often quite innovative technology, quite squarely overlapping on each other's functionality. So it no longer really works to go through one technology at a time and do that evaluation. And what we heard from fee managers was you really get this sense that they're playing this game of whack-a-mole with vendors and with their ownership, because of course all of these new vendors know to go to ownership to generate sales, which means if I'm a fee manager, I've now got all this work to do to stay on top of all of the new stuff that's out there in the market, so I don't get blindsided by my vendors. And that's mm-hmm. there's quite a lot of work in that. I mean, one of the big industry fee managers told us that I think they had done more than 100 individual formal appraisals in the last 2 years of technology.
Wow.
So there is a pretty significant overhead now in terms of innovation out there in the industry.
So the thought is that a fee management company has got multiple owners they work with, and the supplier partners who develop these apps and all this technology are going directly to the owners. So the owners are giving them different owners are giving them different apps or technology they want them to look into or possibly use for the properties that they manage on behalf of that owner.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. And we'll come to this in one of the later observations that we make. But there's now a lot of downside to adopting technologies that don't necessarily work with your technology stack. Again, fee managers have to maintain this technology environment. If there are many vendors of a new technology, let's take smart home as an example. There are a lot of vendors of that technology out there. There are definitely some technologies that are going to work better than others with your platform. Mm-hmm. So the cost of potentially adopting too many technologies and some technologies that are not a great fit for me is a bigger deal than it used to be for fee managers in particular.
Yeah, and Donald.
Yeah, the other.
Go ahead. Go ahead, Donald.
Let me just add real quickly. The other thing that we saw that I think hopefully your listeners will find interesting is, you know, when we mentioned that these CIOs have said that they fundamentally altered how they approach innovation, you know, the way they've been doing it is primarily either through a formal innovation committee, so a cross-functional team of executives and even some mid-level managers, or an individual formerly in charge of the innovation function. So to Don's earlier point, there really is some formality around what are the problems we're trying to solve and then what technologies might apply. And governance-wise, they're approaching it that way. As one CIO put it, you know, we used to buy technology and search for a problem. Now we have a committee defining the problems and then searching for solutions. I think that really is a fundamental shift.
Okay, great. Well, we do have to take a break. We will be back after these commercial messages. You're listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
Your multifamily property's water and sewer rates are skyrocketing every year. The only way to lessen the impact is to reduce water consumption through water conservation. E-Conserve has pioneered a no-cost, no-risk water conservation program, and it doesn't cost you a penny. A property in Houston is saving over $196,000 a year with this no-cost program. Call E-Conserve today at 713-662-3220. For a free analysis of your property, that's eConserve at 713-662-3220.
Do you have multiple multifamily properties in your portfolio? Take control of your unpredictable IT spending with our managed IT services. Whether you have 5 or 500 properties, CTS has you covered with 24/7 nationwide remote and on-site support. Our pricing allows you to budget IT costs year after year with a predictable flat monthly rate. CTS provides the expertise, management, support, and tech infrastructure for all your properties. Call 888-255-9715 or visit ctsglobaltech.com for a free quote.
In a world where keeping up with an ever-evolving technology landscape continues to be a challenge, Allegion helps property managers cut through the noise to supply their residents with the amenity most critical to the digital generation, mobile access control. Ideal for the multifamily market, Allegion has designed mobile-enabled solutions that streamlines access while providing the security and benefits for developers, property managers, and residents alike. To learn more about Allegion's access control product offerings, please visit usallegion.com/MFM.
Well, we are back, and you are listening to Multifamily Matters, and we are discussing the topic of 20 for 20, 20 conversations with senior multifamily executives about the outlook for 2020 and beyond, revisited. I'm Paul Marks, and joining me by phone is Donald Davidoff, founder of D2 Demand Solutions, and Dom Beveridge, principal with D2 Demand Solutions. If you would like to provide show topics, guest ideas, suggestions, or just listen to any archived episode of Multifamily Matters, please go to our website at multifamilyradio.com. Again, I emphasize the word revisited in the title of our topic because we had the same conversation or a conversation a year ago about the white paper that you did at that time. It's been a year later. You've redone this and updated it and revised it based on new interviews. Just a question I have is, are you talking to the same 20 executives that you did last year, or are there some new people in the mix?
Yeah, we decided to keep 10 of the same executives and change 10. So we wanted to have some continuity from last year to this year, but we also wanted to freshen things up a little bit as well. And while we're on the subject, the general breakdown is there were 7 fee managers, including the 4 largest in the industry, 13 owner-operators, 3 of whom were public REITs, the other 10 were predominantly regional owner-operator platforms.
Okay, and I would imagine that they span the entire country as far as the markets they're involved in and so forth. So.
We said
absolutely.
Yeah.
All right. So one of the things that I got out of what we had talked about and reading some of the white paper is Fully automated leasing, that seems like, and you had mentioned that that's the big thing that people are kind of keying in on. Let's talk a little bit about that. What did you find about that?
Well, I mean, first off, it's by far the biggest change from the research we did 1 year ago to today. Like, really, the attitudes towards the technologies that will ultimately automate leasing have completely changed. Last year, you know, if you think about self-tour or self-show as an example, last year we remarked on the degree of pushback that we heard amongst the people that we interviewed. It certainly wasn't on anybody's to-do list for 2019 when we spoke to them a year ago. This year, 85% of the people that we spoke to have self-show as a 2020 priority, like as a 2020 to do. So that shows a huge change in attitudes year over year. The other interesting data points, when we asked our CIOs, like our technology leaders, about their highlights of 2019, like what had been the highlights for them, half of them gave some combination of AI leasing agents, self-show, and access control or smart building technology. So what's interesting about if you think back to what we said right at the beginning of the show, none of the people we spoke to a year ago had any of those things on their high priority to-do list a mm-hmm. year ago. So that's strongly indicative that people did far more work in 2019 on this than they were expecting to, mm-hmm. which again is indicative that this is moving very quickly now. And the last thing, I'll let Donald give his own comment on this, but the other thing was, out of the 20 people we spoke to, two portfolios had completely rolled out AI leasing agents. Now, what that means is, when you call that property, unless you opt out, your call is handled by a robot, essentially by a machine learning platform, which again is a very, very exciting and potentially transformational technology.
And did you notice that when you said that it wasn't on their high priority list to do these projects last year, and you were surprised by the fact that they really had done a lot of work in these areas, was there something that you think caused that to change? Was there within the industry something that occurred, or was it the fact that they felt they had problems that needed to be solved?
So I think it's a combination of wanting the problem to be solved, the fact that there are viable solutions to those problems. Mm-hmm. You're going back to the innovation point we made at the start. Obviously motivates people to do this. When people are doing these projects, I mean, if you take the AI leasing agent example, which is at very early stages of its adoption, but really looks like it will take off very quickly. In fact, I would be shocked if lots of companies aren't doing this in by the end of 2020. The efficiencies that it can potentially drive, you know, we've even seen companies in public talking about finally breaking the 1-to-100 staffing ratio in properties. That's interesting from an efficiency perspective. It's ultimately interesting in terms of I can add properties to my portfolio that I wouldn't have been able to consider before, because I can change my staffing model if I can, for example, share leasing agents between between clusters of properties, mm-hmm. which is hard to do currently. But when you've got technology answering the phones and dealing, you're not asking humans to read out the pet policy 20 times a day.
Right.
It's you've suddenly got time to do other stuff. The fact that there are viable solutions to longstanding problems like that seems to be motivating people to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I would add, I think, a couple other things that are interesting. With respect to self-show, we were surprised a year ago about how many people resisted. In fact, we referred to it as whataboutism. We would ask whether there was interest in self-show, and it was, what about the liability? What about access? What about this? What about that? And that was how we saw the resistance. At the same time, I think fairly quickly, through a number of means, the industry became aware of how much the single family rental company had already done this. And some of the vendors in the single family space looking to expand came into multifamily. Some of the vendors that were already in multifamily expanded into smart home and or self showing. So you kind of have this confluence of technologies, vendors, and the reality that single family home is already doing it. I think that's what drove self show Dom already mentioned, I think AI was primed. It just needed a viable solution, and there are at least a couple of those out there now. So that made a big difference. The other thing, and I won't name names, but the other thing that I became aware of over the last year is how many places in both public and private companies there's a bit of a changing of the guard. So many of the executives that were senior executives when I joined the industry 20 years ago have been retiring or approaching retirement and turning over the reins to the next generation. And I think the next generation is just more aware of technology, less afraid of testing and trying it out. And so the industry will always be quite conservative, but I think there's a bit more of a just sort of in the DNA desire to leverage technology to make both customer experience better and to improve efficiencies. I think the one thing that Dom mentioned a moment ago is really critical. The fact that you have a publicly traded company on a quarterly call saying that their use of AI leasing agents will allow them to crack that 1-for-100 staffing code for front office staff. I mean, that's been, if you will, a glass ceiling on margins from days before I joined the industry 20 years ago. You know, I remember every year at Archstone talking about how can we crack that? How can we crack that? And now that somebody claims that they've done that and believably claims that, I think that's highly motivational to the industry.
Yeah. And you know, one of the things that you mentioned, Dom, was the fact that there's all these startups out there offering this technology, developing apps, developing different things. And I would ask both of you this. I know, Donald, you've seen a lot of this in the industry too. Is the ultimate thing that's going to happen here is once these startups have become successful and have been adopted, that they're going to be gobbled up by the big players in the industry, the big, I won't name their names, but you know who I'm talking about.
Sure.
Is that what we see?
That is definitely something that is on people's minds. We'll talk a little bit more about that later on. It really affects people's vendor strategy. But before you get to that point, what's interesting about this particular area, like the fully automated leasing area, is that some of these problems, like the technology looks quite unsettled. I mean, self-show is a great example of that. You've got vendors in that space, but they're sort of different kind of vendors of different stuff, like we're all trying to crack this problem, which means you've got this characteristic that people are solving bits of this problem. You know, you think about, what do I have to do a self-show? I have to give someone a way of booking it. I have to get them into my building. I have to somehow organize for them to walk around my property unsupervised and experience their tour. I have to get them into public areas. I have to get them into there are all these different things that technology ultimately has to solve for. And it's a very long way away from there being a turnkey solution for that. I mean, you find a spectrum of different things that people are doing, from, you know, really, really focusing on access control, which is something for which there isn't a turnkey solution in the industry right now, which is often accompanied by, let's figure out the tour part in a low-tech or a no-tech environment, right? Let's just figure out what it's like to have people self-touring in our property and what we learn from that. So you're seeing technology that's far from settled, and lots of different ways of approaching it. That's all of that has to play out a bit more before I think these companies get snapped up.
All right, we gotta.
Yeah, I think one interviewee said something that I thought was really fascinating, which is they wish that all the vendors in the space would get together to create one solution, because they each kind of have a piece of it, but nobody yet has curbed the couch. And I think that's what you're going to see evolve through either development or acquisition over the next year or two.
Okay. All right. Well, we've got to take a break. We're going to be back with our next segment of this episode of Multifamily Matters right after these messages. You're listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
Talk Tired of being burned by your carpet vendor? Nobody has you covered like Rasa Floors. They lead the industry with same-day service and cutting-edge technology, like their online ordering portal and mobile app, so you can place orders instantly. The professionals at Rasa Floors are the industry experts offering the hottest new styles of carpet and hard surfaces that will help you achieve your goals. Visit them on social media, watch their videos, and look for them at local trade shows. Rasa Floors will help you make ready your apartment homes for new residents. For more information, visit rasafloors.com.
Looking for cost savings and curb appeal? Call WaterLogic, the nation's specialist in multifamily property water management. Using interactive, smart water technology, WaterLogic's professionals can help you save up to 40% on irrigation water annually, potentially adding tens of thousands of dollars back into your budget. Call WaterLogic at 713-983-9555 for a no-cost irrigation usage analysis. Your property will look great, and you'll be a hometown hero.
Do you have multiple multifamily properties in your portfolio? Take control of your unpredictable IT spending with our managed IT services. Whether you have 5 or 500 properties, CTS has you covered with 24/7 nationwide remote and on-site support. Our pricing allows you to budget IT costs year after year with a predictable flat monthly rate. CTS provides the expertise, management, support, and tech infrastructure for all your properties. Call 888-255-9715 or visit ctsglobaltech.com for a free quote.
Well, we are back and you are listening to Multifamily Matters, and today we're discussing the topic of 20 for 20. 20 conversations with senior multifamily executives about the outlook for 2020 and beyond, revisited. I'm Paul Marks, and joining me by phone is Donald Davidoff, founder of D2 Demand Solutions, and in the studio, Dom Beveridge, principal with D2 Demand Solutions. Before we jump back in the conversation, I do want to take a moment and thank our exclusive sponsors that make Multifamily Matters possible. EconServe, providing multifamily water conservation solutions across the U.S., Rasa Floors, the professional flooring advisor specializing in make-ready replacement flooring for the multifamily industry throughout Texas and Oklahoma. Allegion, a leading provider of mobile-enabled products and solutions for efficient access control within multifamily properties. WaterLogic, the smarter way to water, providing professional irrigation water management. And CTS, complete technology solutions, making managed IT an easy business decision for multifamily. Dom, you had talked a little bit earlier, just touched on BI. Tell us, our listeners, about BI, what it is, and how you're starting to see people using it in the industry.
Yeah, well, we know that there's this ever-increasing value on data, right? There's more and more of it everywhere, which means you've always got a bigger and bigger problem of trying to turn it into insight and ultimately value. And business intelligence are those technologies that really handle that for you, right? It's the data model that you put together that allows you to have control over all of your enterprise's data. It's the platform that allows you to build reporting, build dashboards, predict stuff. You know, that whole breed of technologies is what we would broadly classify as BI. So, I mean, it's very near and dear to our hearts at D2. We were interested / disappointed a year ago when we talked to people about BI, because although several people had done BI projects, the general level of enthusiasm that we heard from people was not what we would expect for something as exciting and transformational as BI done well. But we also made this general observation that the industry hasn't adopted it in the same way that it's adopted, you know, pricing and revenue management or CRM, or you know, there's never been this big bang of adoption where, you know, a few people figured it out and then everybody adopted it. Donald, before I go into this year's, is there anything else you'd say on that?
Yeah, the one thing I would add is I think that there's a maturation in BI happening where people are starting to realize that, you know, BI is more than just reports. For a long time, business intelligence was just viewed as creating aggregate reports. And as the industry realizes that it's a lot more than that, it's, as Dom said, about dashboarding and making direct interventions in the business as a result of that, and even helping to predict the future. I think over the next year or two, you're going to see some innovations happening in the industry to bring a more sophisticated platform or more sophisticated platforms to bear, because the operators are craving it.
Yeah. So if we think about what we saw this year, well, so first of all, there was some significant number of leaders had BI as their number one priority for 2020. So that was a big change for us from last year, where the level of energy enthusiasm wasn't as high as we expected it to be. This year, there was a lot of energy for it. But we started to ask people, we asked a more detailed question to people about how they were doing business intelligence in their companies. And what we found out of the 20 people that we spoke to, and keep in mind the sample of 20 companies skews towards the relatively big, relatively sophisticated and platforms, 40% of the people we spoke to had built their own capabilities. So they'd used standard tools, standard BI tools, like Power BI, that kind of thing, to build their own data model, their own capability. 30% had bought off the shelf from their PMS vendor. And 30%, surprisingly, had no BI or were too early in their journey to say that they had a capability, which, again, is kind of remarkable given how long that capability has been around. But the thing that we really started to notice on this point of adoption was that when you look through the 20 responses that we got from these people we were speaking to, whether they used these words or not, they were describing a point at which they currently were on a multi-year evolutionary cycle, right? So and it kind of explains the observation we made a year ago, like the reason why it's never felt like CRM or pricing and revenue management is it's not the case that people just adopt it and then they're done. Well, what happens is something more like, you know, a company will go as long as it can without doing BI. And when it can't stand that anymore, maybe it reaches for an off-the-shelf PMS vendor product. Well, what we found from people who had done that this year, they told us that they had adopted, but already knew they were going to have to change it out for something else in 18 months, because they knew they would outgrow that model. And then once you take that step, you then move into having to build your own thing. And when you build your own thing, that's a big design and build project. And once you've done that, you've then got to think about rolling it out to your properties. So all of that stuff I just described is this sort of evolutionary progress that typically plays out over multiple years. And that really does more than anything to throw light on the observation that we made a year ago about the way that the industry has adopted the technology.
And I have a question. Donald, you may be able to answer this. Dom just said that the 20 people that you've interviewed, it kind of skews towards the larger companies. What about the smaller companies? What are they going to be doing with business intelligence and so forth? Is there anything, do you see that coming, a longer adoption period for that?
Yeah, I think, it's a really good question, because the folks who are in, say, call it the 7 or 8,000 to like 18 or 20,000 unit portfolios, mm-hmm. they've got a large enough portfolio that they need good BI, but they're too small to invest seven figures to build it. Some of them are adopting the off-the-shelf solutions that exist right now. Some of them are even doing what Dom just described, where they're adopting it as kind of the best they can do now, but with an eye towards how they're going to grow from it in the future. And, my prediction is that, within the next year or so, there will be either enhancements from the existing vendors in this space or new vendors coming in, because it is a place where 30% of the decent sized portfolios and even more of the smaller ones don't really have a solution yet. Mm-hmm. And again, to me, BI is not just about reporting. If all I get is the off-the-shelf reports with the off-the-shelf integrations, if I don't have the flexibility to create my own dashboards, to bring in my own data sources, then I don't really have BI. I have a report engine. I have an information portal. But, the big guys who have built their own, they haven't limited themselves on which systems of record they bring into their data warehouse. And so I think there really is room in the industry for someone to come in with a flexible UI, an extensible database, for the data warehouse and actually serve that very market you're talking about in a much more sophisticated way than exists today.
Okay. We have a couple minutes left. Dom, tell us, what other things are you seeing that are being adopted?
Yeah, well, so the one of the things that jumped out at us was the general pattern of adoption of some of these new technologies. You know, Donald talked earlier about the, you know, 1 year ago we talked about this technology tipping point. Like, we could tell that the industry was about to start adopting en masse some of these technologies. 1 year later, you can tell that the adoption pattern is not going to be the same this time around as it was in the late 90s, early aughts. And the main reason for that is that much of this technology involves installing physical stuff in buildings, right? Smart home technology, access control, like even things like self-show have a relatively high touch on properties. And the thing that's particularly interesting is, if you want to know how companies are going to adopt it, look at the kind of company that they are. Like, fee managers don't have the same latitude to adopt stuff that like a REIT would, for example. A fee manager that owns some part of its portfolio, you're increasingly seeing companies like that trying to figure these problems out at properties that they own, and then proactively going to owners and saying, this is how you do this technology. Like, this is our recommendation, like house opinions, as we hear it called. And even when you look at things like owner operators, one sort of interesting wrinkle that we saw is owner operators don't always have complete latitude to adopt whatever technologies they want. If you think of the example of an owner operator whose portfolio is organized into individual joint ventures or different funds, for example, because there's some work, there's some cost in figuring out some of these installed technologies. Nobody really wants to be first.
Right.
Right. Do I really want to incur all of this cost for the benefit of a bunch of other people whose financial interests I don't share? I mean, that's this reality that wasn't relevant when, you know, pricing and revenue management was being adopted, or not as relevant, but it's if you're trying to figure out how your competitors or how these vendors are going to get adopted in the industry, you really have to look at the kinds of companies that they're trying to position their stuff to.
Okay, well, we're going to take a break, and we are going to be back with our final segment of this episode of Multifamily Matters right after these messages. You're listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
In a world where keeping up with an ever-evolving technology landscape continues to be a challenge, Allegion helps property managers cut through the noise to supply their residents with the amenity most critical to the digital generation, mobile access control. Ideal for the multifamily market, Allegion has designed mobile-enabled solutions that streamlines access while providing the security and benefits for developers, property managers, and residents alike. To learn more about Allegion's access control product offerings, please visit usallegion.com/MFM.
Your multifamily property's water and sewer rates are skyrocketing every year. The only way to lessen the impact is to reduce water consumption through water conservation. EconServe has pioneered a no-cost, no-risk water conservation program, and it doesn't cost you a penny. A property in Houston is saving over $196,000 a year with this no-cost program. Call EconServe today at 713-662-3220. For a free analysis of your property, that's EconServe at 713-662-3220.
Tired of being burned by your carpet vendor? Nobody has you covered like Rasa Floors. They lead the industry with same-day service and cutting-edge technology, like their online ordering portal and mobile app, so you can place orders instantly. The professionals at Rasa Floors are the industry experts offering the hottest new styles of carpet and hard surfaces that will help you achieve your goals. Visit them on social media, watch their videos, and look for them at local trade shows. Rasa Floors will help you make ready your apartment homes for new residents. For more information, visit rasafloors.com.
Well, we are back with our final segment of Multifamily Matters, and we're discussing the topic of 20 for 20. 20 conversations with senior multifamily executives about the outlook for 2020 and beyond, revisited. I'm Paul Marks. Joining me by phone is Donald Davidoff, founder of D2 Demand Solutions. And in the studio is Don Beveridge, principal with D2 Demand Solutions. And Donald, we were talking at the end of the last segment about all the development that's going on at properties with the technology, the access, and so forth. And I would imagine that with new developed properties that are being built, that's obviously easier and more cost effective to install and put in than an existing property. But then you've got the different classes of properties too. You've got the A, B, C class properties. So a B minus or a C property may not be able to compete in these areas. What's out there for them?
It's certainly true that it's easier to put it into a new development than to retrofit an existing building. And certainly the stereotype of, you know, smart home tech being appropriate for A class, but maybe not B, C, is fairly prevalent. We're actually finishing up research on another white paper, research paper that we'll be releasing probably in about a month, where we dug really heavily into who is doing smart tech for real, not just talking about it, and how they're underwriting it, and found a couple of interesting counterintuitive things that I think dovetail with this 20 for 20 paper. One in particular is that when you think about smart home tech that provides utility savings and therefore could justify supporting a higher rent, we've actually seen some B, solid B, and even into the C class properties are certainly secondary and tertiary markets that you wouldn't normally think of stereotypically for this, who have done real A-B testing and proven they can get at least $20 of rent lift. And when you dig into that, that sounds counterintuitive at first, but as you dig into it, if you think about it, you know, saving $40 or $50 on utilities on a $3,000 rent in San Francisco to that A-class demographic isn't as meaningful as maybe saving $40 or $50 to somebody who's paying $1,200 in, you know, Arkansas or something like that. So there's actually more of a play on the retrofits than you may think. And then another area is around asset protection. So the area of like leak detectors, it was funny. We reached out to some risk management folks that I know to try to understand how to build assumptions into underwriting, say, loss prevention for having leak detectors. And we asked, you know, well, what percentage of properties have a leak issue, a water issue each year, because we wanted to use appropriate assumptions. And the head of risk management we talked to at one large company said, oh, every property has at least one a year. Hmm. So you can pretty much use 100%. And it's just an assumption around the average cost of a leak that we needed to zero in on. So yes, A class easier, yes, development easier, but there are some compelling pro formas, certainly in the B class and even down to C, and then around things like asset protection. So I think the industry is getting more sophisticated in how it's looking at that technology and therefore getting more willing to think about retrofits.
Okay. I wanted to, you know, we talked about one of the things that were kind of, you discovered with your survey this year of the executives was that a lot of them were going back to basics. Let's talk about what that means.
Yeah, well, that was that really stood out at us because we, when we asked the same question a year ago, we asked people, what is your number one priority for the next year? Last year, we didn't see anything particularly interesting. Like, people told us general stuff, but there was nothing that suggested any kind of a trend. But this year, almost half of the people we spoke to said some version of 2020 is the year we go back to basics. What that tended to mean was back to basics with team. So it's either we've equipped our teams to go deliver. This is the year we really want to support them in doing that. Or it was talent management, talent acquisition. Just developing our core teams. A smaller but still significant number of people, it was we're going back to basics on customer experience, on customer service. So that was the general color on those things. But there are three things that we'd probably read into that back to basics idea. And by the way, several of these people independently used those specific words, back to basics, mm-hmm. which was kind of interesting, yeah, as well. So the three things that interest us, if we think about the years we've been doing 20 for 20, 2018, it feels like there were a lot of people doing big foundational projects, right? PMS switches, that kind of thing. 2019, that wasn't the case. Like, people had been adding more sort of differentiating functionality to their platforms. It makes sense in terms of that multi-year narrative that 2020 is the year we really focus on delivering on this stuff through our people. Like, mm-hmm. that makes a lot of sense to us. A second thing is we're late in the cycle, right? In fact, based on the last few days, we might be really really late in the cycle at the moment. But it kind of makes sense looking forward to the rest of 2020 and beyond to be focusing on stuff that's less capital intensive and more people focused. But then the final thing is, it kind of brings us all the way back to the first point that we made about innovation, like the fact that people are doing more of it, they're spending more time on it. It's taking more of their attention than it used to. We really got this impression talking to particularly a lot of the operational leaders that they're a little bit assailed by all of this this new stuff that's coming at them. Like, they really have to focus a lot of time making decisions and understanding this stuff and what they should consider changing about their platform. And it's just become a little bit harder than it used to be to not be distracted from our core thing, which is ultimately about delivering living experiences, like, through our people. It's mm-hmm. It's still, technology notwithstanding, it's still an intensely people focused business, and the desire to not be distracted from focusing on doing that really well is, I think, something that motivated a lot of people to tell us that.
Yeah. And I know Donald,
yeah, that was,
go ahead,
that was very impactful to me. I remember back in the 1980s, if anybody remembers the book Megatrends by John Nesbitt, mm-hmm. one of the megatrends back then was, the more technology comes into people's lives, the more they also crave high-touch experiences. So I kind of think this is the 2020 version of that decades-old human, you know, need that, yes, we want and crave the convenience that technology brings, but we don't want to lose the humanness. And I think CROs are reacting to that.
I mean, one really good quote came from one of the COOs that we spoke to. Like, whenever I have a performance issue at a property, it's practically never to do with the technology, and it's practically always to do with people and performance. So, sure. You know, that kind of tells you where your mind should be.
Yeah.
And the problems of being distracted from that.
Ultimately, there, no matter what technology you put in or artificial intelligence you put in, you still have to work with people on the property. They still have to do that. Well, I want to kind of transition from the 20 for 20 into something else. But before we do, I wanted to make sure our audience knows, if you want to get a copy of this white paper, you can certainly go to the website for D2 Demand Solutions, which they will give you in a minute. But you can also go to our website and go to this episode on the website, the episode page, and click on the D2 logo at the bottom of the page, and it'll take you to their website where you can get it, or take you directly to the white paper. But it's the 2020 edition of 20 for 20. It's fascinating information. Always, you guys knock it out of the park when you do this. But that takes me to my next question to you, and that is, you're not in business necessarily to write white papers and do surveys. So tell us a little bit about how you guys got in the industry, as well as about D2 Demand Solutions and the kind of work that you do on behalf of your clients.
So I'll let Donald answer that, but before I do, to get a copy, go to d2demand.com/20for20.
Okay.
That's the quickest way to do it.
Great. But
Donald, I'll let you answer.
Yeah, I shared earlier how I got into the business, you know, coming at it actually from the pricing software and engineering perspective, and was fortunate enough that, you know, Scott Sellers, then CEO at Archstone, had this vision of hotel-like pricing and revenue management for the industry. Not only led the team that built LRO, but then switched sides of the table and had a 10-year career as a senior executive at Archstone, and then a year on the executive committee at Holiday Retirement before I founded D2 Demand 7.5 years ago. Basically, what D2 Demand does is high-impact C-suite projects on the demand management platform. So what do we mean by demand management? Everything that helps manage demand from its inception to the whole life cycle of the resident. So pricing, revenue management, sales performance improvement, marketing, not as an agency, but more marketing strategy, marketing analytics, customer experience, and then business intelligence is really the way we bring data to everything. Again, we kind of have that systems engineering approach wired into our DNA. So we want data on everything, whether it seems quantitative or soft. There's still ways to bring data to bear to it. So that's the BI angle. So that's kind of what we do. Dom, I'll let you explain how you got in the industry and if there's anything you want to add to that.
Yeah, I mean, I have a not dissimilar background to Donald in that I came from the software side on the pricing and revenue management side. I've spent a lot of years in consulting and was up until the time I joined D2 was with the Rainmaker Group. So LRO has been a long-term feature of my background in this industry. Just to go back to one of the points you were making earlier about, you know, we're obviously not in business just to write white papers. Mm-hmm. 20 for 20 is just interesting to us because for a number of reasons. Obviously, it's a really big marketing effort for us. We generate a lot of engagement just from this white paper. But it's really the motivation to do it in the first place was really about wanting to understand what was on the minds of these senior executives. And having done this twice now, having gone back through this exercise this year, I mean, I think Donald and I probably principally feel educated by this experience, right? We feel like we know, every time we sit down and do this, we know a bunch of things that we didn't know at all beforehand, and just generally feel like we have an appreciation for what's going on out there at some very interesting technological times in our industry.
I would imagine that you two are probably some of the most educated people in the multifamily industry when it comes to what's on the minds of the senior executives at the companies that make a difference in multifamily. But before we end the show, I want you guys to give our listeners a way to contact you if they have questions or if they'd like to talk about engaging you.
Sure. Well, the quickest way is to just go to our website. So it's d2demand.com. That's d2demand.com. Mm-hmm. There are contact forms on the website. We're usually around industry conferences, well, to the extent that there will be any this year.
That's true.
Yeah.
All right. Well, great. Well, thank you guys so much for being on the show. Well, this is becoming an annual thing, and we definitely want to have you back when you have the next white paper out to discuss what you found in the industry. We'll be back next week with another great topic and power panel of industry experts. You have been listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.
Thank you for listening to Multifamily Matters, a weekly radio show that discusses current topics and trends in the multifamily industry. To find out more about the show or make suggestions for topics or interesting guests, go to multifamilyradio.com. You have been listening to Multifamily Matters because multifamily matters.